to borrow this hunk for a little bit.
Logan sort of freezes, his mouth hanging open. Darla looks back at him and bats her eyelashes. I'm pissed she called me Valentine, because only Logan calls me that, and most of all, she most certainly isn't going to use him as her partner in this contest. Actually, I do mind, I tell Darla politely as I snake my arm around Logan's back. Because he's partnering with me. Darla's jaw drops.
You're entering the Wild Wilderness Woman contest?
Yep, I say with my chin held high. And I'm really competitive. I feel Logan's body go tight, but he doesn't say anything. Darla just nods and says,
Well, may the best woman win.
Good luck, I say kindly, to show I can be a classy lady when I want to. When Darla's out of earshot, Logan turns and looks down at me.
Do you even have any idea what you signed up for?
I shrug. Not really, but I think I can handle it. You did see my dancing on the tables, right? Logan snickers and shakes his head. He then pulls me in and gives me a tight, reassuring hug. Or is that sympathy I feel radiating off of him? When he pulls back, he says,
Babe, wildest doesn't mean the type of wild you're thinking of. It means more survival stuff. How to be an Alaskan woman.
I think back to the 5 hours I was lost in the woods and ask, One of the events isn't figuring out how to navigate, is it?
Not this year,
he says with a chuckle.
But they are challenging, although they always throw in a few easy ones, and then there's a surprise event at the end.
What do I have to do? I ask with dread starting to mount. It's with definite sympathy that Logan says,
There are 5 events. The first is, who can clean and debone a salmon the fastest? Second is carving a saddle loin from a moose carcass. Third is building a fire with flint. Fourth is chopping wood. These events are all announced at least a month before the festival so the women can practice. And the 5th event, well, you don't know what that is until you sign up for the contest, but it's usually a really fun one. I haven't heard what it is yet.
Well, shit. I know nothing about those. I can eat a salmon fillet, and I can cut up some moose for that stew. Fire? Forget about it. And I could possibly chop wood. I'm pretty strong and did CrossFit and yoga back in New York.
You totally don't have to do this,
Logan says as he chucks his knuckles under my chin.
Darla was just trying to get your goat by asking me to be her partner for the surprise event, but you know I would never have said yes to her.
I know, I say as my eyes stray over to where Darla is talking with a group of women. They look at me and laugh, and I know damn well they don't think I have the chops to hang with them. I turn back to Logan. I'm totally entering, just to show that bitch I'm not afraid of what Alaska has to throw at me. Logan smiles at me softly, maybe even a little sadly, as he knows I'm going down in flames, but he leans down and gives me a soft, lingering kiss that I'm glad about, because I know Darla's still watching.
Suck it, bitch. You might beat me in the Wild Wilderness Woman contest, but I got the hottest, sweetest, best guy around.
Let's go sign up, I tell Logan with a brave smile. He nods and takes my hand, leading me over to the contest booth. Logan introduces me to Al Portney, one of the town councilmen. He's young, probably my age, and I can tell by the laughter in his eyes that he thinks I'm nuts for entering. But he hands me the brown manila envelope that contains the rules as well as the information on the last event and takes my entry fee of $25, which Logan insists on paying. I let him do this because I've also learned that it's important to him to take care of his girl. Doesn't matter that I'm a millionaire. He pays for shit. Except I did refuse to let him buy my squares for the moose poop drop. That was for charity and was different. We walk away from the sign-up booth and I start to open the envelope.
I'm going to go get another beer. You want one?
Logan asks. I pull out the packet of papers and see the contest starts in less than an hour. I shake my head. Nope. I need my wits about me. Logan chuckles and bends in to kiss the top of my head.
You'll be fabulous, Valentine. You always are.
He walks off to get his beer, and my heart trips madly again as I watch him walk away with a goofy smile on my face. But then I remember I have business to attend to, and I start reading the materials, only scanning the information on the first four events in which I'll probably come dead last. When I get to the fifth event and read it, a wicked smile comes to my face. Logan wasn't joking. The surprise event is going to be fun. And I know I can win at least that one. When Logan returns, I stuff the papers back into the folder and tell him, "Put that beer down. I need you to run me back to your house."
"What? Why?"
he asks as he sets his beer down on the table. "And we need to stop by the general store, too," I add. I take his hand and start dragging him toward the side of the town square where his truck is parked. When we get in and are headed to his house, he asks,
"What's the fifth event?"
"It's called the Welcome Home Honey event," I tell him, as my mind races on what I need to grab. Logan laughs.
"They've done that one before. It's hilarious."
I can only imagine. The event is simple. The premise is that your man is coming home after a long, hard day of work, and all he wants is to relax. How will you help him do it? I'd totally give Logan a blowjob, but obviously that's not going to be allowed. The contest info said that there would be props allowed, and most of the women competing had signed up over a week ago when entries were opened, so they would be prepared. I had less than an hour to gear up. "Okay, baby," I tell him as he drives to his house. "Give me some intel. What will my competition do?" Logan snickers.
"They definitely don't get on their knees while handcuffed and suck their man off. And before you can even ask, no, you can't do that. That's private, between you and me."
I roll my eyes. "Seriously, what can I expect?"
"Well, this is a tough life out here, Valentine. The men work hard away from the home, and the women work hard in the home. These events are real life. They clean kills, chop wood, and have food on the table when their man gets home."
"Doesn't sound very romantic," I mutter.
"For many of the families around here, it's not,"
he says.
"But romance is what you make of it."
He says this as a hand comes out to rest on my thigh where he gives it a squeeze. I smile back at him, put my hand over his. He's told me enough to know what I have to do in this event. And at least I'll show them I'm good at something when it comes to being in Alaska with my man.
Chapter 20. Logan. Christ, my woman is failing miserably, and I couldn't be prouder. There are seven women in the contest, and Darla and April are neck and neck after the first four events. Valentine is dead last. But after she finished each event, she gave me a thumbs up and a smile. Every task she attempted was so fucking funny I couldn't help but laugh. Ted stood next to me, and we drank our beers and kept our eyes pinned on Valentine. For the salmon cleaning, when the start whistle was blown, the other six contestants whipped out their knives and had their fishes cleaned and filleted in less than 2 minutes. When the stop whistle blew, April won that event, and Jorgen was cheering quite proudly. Valentine was just getting up the courage to touch the raw fish with her nose all wrinkled up. The look of utter relief she didn't have to touch it had Ted doubling over with laughter. The moose carving was just as funny, with carcasses hanging from trees, two contestants to a carcass, as there was a saddle loin on each side. Since Valentine was the last to enter, she had an entire carcass to herself, but it was clear when the whistle blew, she had no clue where the saddle loin was. The other women had their knives out and were making short work of their task. Valentine's eyes came to mine, and she pointed to an area near the shank, raising her eyebrows in question whether she was even close. I grinned and shook my head. Before she could even point again, the stop whistle sounded, this time Darla having carved it out the fastest. I'll have to give Valentine credit on the fire building. I was able to give her about 5 minutes of instruction before it began, and she followed my advice beautifully. She even got the fire lit, but couldn't get it high enough to burn through the finish rope that was strung on a frame across the fire. Darla again won that competition. April gave Valentine a congratulatory high five for getting her fire started, and then Valentine grinned at me with a good deal of pride on her face. She was having fun, and that meant I was having fun. The wood chopping was also a bit of a surprise. Valentine's a tall woman, but she's thin, not bone thin, and she definitely has lean muscle on her, but chopping wood is no easy task. She had no clue what to do, so when the whistle blew, she watched April for a few seconds to get the basics, and then she set to chopping her stack. I was stunned when she was able to split her first piece cleanly with her axe, and next thing you know, several people were cheering on Valentine. Now, granted, 100% of those people were men, but I didn't mind. I wanted her to have support, because even though she was strong enough to do it, she wasn't as strong as her competitors. When the whistle blew, April put her axe down and wiped her brow, winking at Jorgen because she had won that event. Al Portney now comes to the microphone on the same platform where the band had performed last night and announces, "Okay, we are at our last event, an oldie but a goodie, the ever-popular Welcome Home Honey event. We'll need about 20 minutes to get the stage set up, so go grab a beer and relax for a bit. We'll be starting up again shortly." Valentine comes over to me, and first things first, I give her a big hug. Then, a big, deep kiss. "You were awesome," I tell her. She grins at me and says, "Well, you haven't seen anything yet? Got my bag?" I hand her the large garbage bag she had thrown a few things in when we went to my house, and one other thing she got at the general store. Having been very, very pleased, she found what she was looking for there. I have no idea what's up her sleeve, but I am eager to find out what she's going to do. Turns out it takes almost 45 minutes to get the stage set up, which includes a set design to resemble a home. There's a realistic-looking kitchen, a small dining table, a recliner, and a TV. There's also a walled frame around the stage, and when Al comes out to the microphone, dark curtains are pulled closed, so the home setup is blocked out. "All right, folks, come gather close. We're ready for the Welcome Home Honey event. Now, this is the event where our women can get as creative as they want, or they can just show us how it is when they welcome their honey home. This is more of a subjectively judged event, so each council member will award points on how well they think each woman does. And I think we're ready for our first contestant, so without further ado..." One by one, the contestants put on their best Welcome Home Honey skit. They each get a few minutes to set their stage, then the curtains are pulled back. There's a fake door, and their honey walks through. Then the woman shows why she's the best at welcoming them home. Most of them are pretty funny. April's is adorable as she welcomes Jorgen through the door and has a picnic basket packed for him, along with two fishing poles. She walks right back out the door with him, denoting to all that she knows her guy would appreciate some early evening fishing with his girl. Darla's is kind of predictable, having a hearty meal cooked for when her honey comes home. She conned Monty into being her partner, and he'll probably get laid tonight, I'm sure, for his participation. Finally, we get down to the last contestant, which is Valentine. The curtains are closed, so she can set up, and Al points at me to go to the side of the stage so I can walk through the door when she's ready. I'm fucking nervous as hell for her, and yet excited to see what she's going to do. Valentine is fiendishly clever, and this should be good. "Okay," Al says into the microphone. "Our last contestant tonight is our beautiful New York visitor, Valentine French. She's done a remarkable job on all of these events, don't you think so, folks?" The men all give rousing cheers, most of the women offering lukewarm applause, and Darla glares stonily at Al. "You ready, Logan?" Al asks as he looks across the stage to me, and then adds, "Honey?" I resist the urge to flip him off and just nod at him. Al leans into the microphone and says, "I give you Miss Valentine French, all the way from New York City. More cheering, and the black curtains slide open. I can't see the stage, but when I hear a collective gasp from the crowd, I figure that's my cue to walk through the door. And holy fucking shit. Christ on a cracker and Jesus. I've died and gone to heaven. Valentine has set the stage perfectly, and there isn't a man who wouldn't give his right nut to come home to this. She has soft, sexy music with a feral sort of beat playing in the background, and I note that's my tiny wireless speaker she must have snatched from my bedroom earlier. She's standing by the recliner wearing a minuscule red dress, and when I say minuscule, there's hardly anything to it. She has to be freezing her ass off, and my eyes immediately go to her breasts. I'm relieved that at least the material is thick enough to cover her hardened nipples, or she's wearing a thicker bra underneath. Regardless, the dress is strapless and cuts into a deep V at her breasts, and the hem barely comes to mid-thigh. And on her feet are the fucking sexiest shoes I've ever seen. Red spike-heeled sandals with a thick leather strap that goes around her ankles. And because my girl is from New York City, she's casually but sexily holding a martini glass with three olives in her hand. Hey, baby, she purrs as she struts to me. I sneak a glance out at the crowd, and every man is watching her like a hawk, their tongues practically hanging out of their mouths. It makes me proud, but makes me want to crack some heads, too. When she reaches me, she curls a hand around the back of my neck and goes to her tiptoes, placing her lips near my ear, but speaking loud enough the crowd can hear. I've missed you. Fuck, and I'm turned on. I have to think of fish guts or something so I don't get a hard-on. Valentine hands me the martini and says, I made your favorite drink. She knows this isn't my favorite drink, which is beer, but she's putting her New York spin on this, so I take it from her and bring it to my mouth. It's water, but I take only a small sip. She smiles at me, her lips slick and puffy, as she takes the glass back, bending to the side to place it on a table beside the recliner. Her warm hands then go inside my jacket and she slides it from my shoulders, placing it carefully over the back of the chair. Valentine's hand then takes mine, and she laces her fingers through mine. She turns and walks around the back of the recliner, leading me there. When we get to the front of it, she puts her hands to my chest and pushes me gently down. I know you've had a long, hard day, so sit back and relax. I sink back down into the recliner, and all of these visions of this being my life for real with Valentine start crashing in on me. She looks at me sympathetically, not because of what I'm thinking, because she has no clue, but because she's in character and she's welcoming her honey home after a long day. To my surprise, Valentine turns sideways and sits on my lap, wrapping her arms around my neck and crossing one sexy leg over the other. And it's useless. With her warm ass on me, I start to get hard. She knows it and wiggles a little, and I want to spank her ass for that. Valentine stares at me a moment, then places her fingertip on my chin, as if she's contemplating something. Then she says, again, loud enough for the crowd to hear, I bet I know exactly what will make you feel better. Want to hear? Fuck yeah, I want to hear. Another glance out at the crowd, and I know they all want to hear as well. Then let me tell you, she purrs, and I think I hear a few guys in the audience groan. Valentine leans into me, puts her lips near my ear, and whispers low enough so only I can hear. I want you to handcuff me again tonight, Logan. Use me hard, okay? Fuck. Full-blown erection. No one in the audience could hear that, but she bares her teeth and bites my ear, and everyone saw that. Some guy whistles, and then they all start cheering with hoots and hollers as the black curtains drop, and Valentine and I are alone for a brief moment. She grins at me. How did I do? You should win the whole fucking thing after that, I tell her earnestly. And I've got a hard on, you brat. And I'm not wearing any panties under this dress if you want to cop a quick feel to see how much I'm turned on, she whispers. I don't even ponder for a second if she's teasing me or not. My hand goes right between her legs, knowing full well someone could walk back here any minute, and my fingers find her wetness. Jesus, I mutter before leaning in to brush my lips over her neck. Can we go home now? Yes, let's go home, she says on a low moan. Visibly hard or not, I pull my hand out from between her legs, surge up out of the chair, and grab my coat. I throw it over Valentine's shoulders, and then I head off the stage and toward where my truck is parked. We're not staying around for the announcement of the winner.
Chapter 21. Valentine. There should be a law across the nation that everyone has to start their mornings this way. I purr as my fingers massage Logan's scalp. His mouth is working between my legs, and he hasn't shaved since the Wild Wilderness Woman contest 3 days ago, and I love the way his bristles feel against my legs. I vaguely hear Sassy scratching at the bedroom door, and I assume Logan put her out there before waking me up in this most delicious way. Logan grunts his agreement to my statement, flutters his tongue against my clit hard, and I break apart for him. I'm still trembling when he climbs up my body, his lips wet and triumph in his eyes. I give him back a lazy, sated look as he pulls my legs apart and raises them. Good morning, he says gruffly as he smiles down at me. Morning, I mumble back, and then he slides into me. My eyelids flutter closed as Logan wraps my legs around his waist and proceeds to fuck me slowly and tenderly. God, it is so good. It gets better every time, and I'm not a stupid girl. I may have a useless degree, but I know what this means. It means there are feelings, and I'm not going to try to deny it, but I have to admit, I am confused by it. But for now, I go with it. I feel every inch of Logan's cock inside of me, dragging torturously slow against the walls of my sex as his hips lazily flex and rotate. Most times with Logan, we go pretty hard and fast, a pace we both like and get off on pretty quickly. Just yesterday, I went to visit him in the police station wearing a wool skirt and boots, hoping he would think I looked pretty. I was going to invite him to lunch, but Logan had other ideas. He took one look at me, and without even saying hello or giving me a kiss, he walked to the front door of the station and turned the lock. When he came back into his office, I asked, "What if someone needs you?"
"Nothing's going to happen in the next 10 minutes, I promise you," he said smugly.
"You only got 10 minutes in you," I taunted with an arched eyebrow.
"All I need to get us both off, baby,"
he returned cockily, which made me go wet at the thought. He could get us both off in less time than that. We made out for maybe a minute, my hands diving down his pants to work his cock, his pulling my skirt up and playing with me through my underwear from behind. At the 2-minute mark, he had me turned, bent over his desk, and was driving into me. He hadn't even bothered to more than pull my panties to the side, nor do nothing more than push his pants and gun belt down past his hips. Fast, hard, hot, slick fucking, and we both came really fast. It was totally less than 10 minutes.
"Where'd your mind go?"
Logan asks as he thrusts gently into me. I open my eyes to find his face hovering over mine. He's got his torso held off me, but those hips of his are grinding lightly against mine, even though his pace is very slow. "Thinking about yesterday, in the police station," I murmur. Logan punches his hips a little harder into me, clearly enjoying the memory as well. He bends down, brushes his lips against mine, and says,
"You're perfect."
"As are you," I murmur back.
I close my eyes, wrap my arms and legs tightly around Logan, and let him leisurely fuck me to a fantastic orgasm, which I share with his. And then I go back to sleep for a while after he leaves for work. My phone rings, and I reach out to nab it off the coffee table. I was almost asleep as I lay on Logan's couch, so was a little sluggish when I answered. Hello?
Damn. Did I wake you up?
I hear Jeremy say.
It's almost 2 p.m. there.
I was just on the verge of taking a nap, I say, as I scoot up on the couch and rub my eyes with my free hand. Sassy stands up from where she was lying at my feet, arches her back like a cat, yawns, and then flops back down. It's official. We've both become super lazy.
You're in freaking Alaska, Jeremy says. There are a million awesome things you could be doing and exploring, and you're napping instead.
I think briefly of telling him Logan wore me out this morning, but that's not exactly true. Besides, Jeremy's always had a good bullshit detector where I'm concerned. There's nothing around here that really appeals to me, I admit to him. I'm terrified to go hiking because of that experience getting lost, and there's nothing to do in this town. I have no way to get over to the bigger town of Ketchikan, and now that I'm staying at Logan's house, I can't even walk into town. It's like 3 miles away. I have to depend on rides.
You can't walk 3 miles,
Jeremy asks dryly. There are bears, I tell him, matter-of-factly.
Then why the hell are you still there, Val?
Jeremy says.
I truly thought you'd be back by now.
I don't know, I grumble as I finger the soft fleece of the blanket I'd put over my legs when I lay down on the couch after lunch.
I'm going to guess it's Logan,
Jeremy says, pointing out the obvious. And he's right. I am having an amazing time with Logan. Sure, the days that he has to work suck because I'm sort of stuck with nothing to do, but when he's not working, it is fucking awesome. He's taken me flying again, and we've gone to Ketchikan a few times to peruse art galleries and eat at some nice restaurants. We've hit the Wounded Caribou at night and had a few beers with the locals, and I'm getting to know a lot of them. Sure, some of the guys can still be a bit jerky, but they totally hold it way in check when Logan's around. Of course, I've also become closer with April. She's not like any of my girlfriends back home, most of whom are married or engaged, have kids or are pregnant, and want to do nothing but debate whether breastfeeding in public should be allowed. It's no wonder that Jeremy is my best friend back there.
I notice you're not writing,
Jeremy says quietly into the phone, and my entire body tightens.
It's been over a week, and I'm sure you've been watching social media. Your fans are clamoring to know what's going on with your hot police chief.
God. So much is going on. So many feelings and experiences. And the thought of sharing them makes me sick. I've been debating the last few days about writing a blog that's complete fiction just to give people something, but I can't even do that. I've always told the blunt and honest truth. I can't do it, Jeremy, I whisper into the phone. I can't write anymore about what's going on with Logan and me.
Because?
He prompts. Because, I say quickly, and then falter. I can't say the words out loud to him.
You've fallen for him, haven't you?
He asks in awe. No teasing, no joking, pure joyousness for me. I have, I whisper, afraid for it to be true because it means everything about my life will change. But it's only been a few weeks. How can that happen so fast? Maybe it's not real.
Have you ever met anyone like Logan before?
Jeremy asks. Never.
What's the first thing you think of when you wake up in the morning?
He asks. Logan, I say quickly. But I don't elaborate that it's often because his mouth or fingers are on me.
Before you go to sleep?
Logan?
Val, what does the thought of not being with him make you feel?
Jeremy asks cautiously. I pause a moment, thinking about how I'd feel if I were to go back to New York City right now, this very moment. My stomach pitches, my chest squeezes, and my legs feel rubbery. It feels wretched, I tell him with brutal honesty.
Then, my dear, you are 100% in love with the man,
Jeremy says, as if he's a proud parent.
Whoa,
I say, almost panicked. Who said anything about love?
You did, ding-dong, he says. Everything you just described, it's love. Or fucking close enough to it.
What if he doesn't feel the same? I ask, completely out of sorts. I've never felt like this for someone, and I've never doubted how someone's felt about me. Granted, I knew without a doubt how most of the men I dated or been intimate with felt about me. I was a possession, or a prize. I was an afterthought sometimes, and other times I was just a really great lay. But with Logan, I have no clue how he feels about me. None at all. So what do? I ask Jeremy.
That I can't tell you, darling, he says gently. You have to muddle through love on your own. But from what you've told me, he sounds like a great guy. You can tell he likes you a lot.
I guess, I say hesitantly.
You're going home with him soon to meet his parents, right?
It's not like that, I say quickly. His trip home was already planned. I got sort of invited as an afterthought. Jeremy laughs and doesn't stop for several moments. Finally, I snap at him. What's so funny?
Oh, Valley,
Jeremy says with all the affection in the world.
You could never be an afterthought. I love you, and at least you have that.
I smile, warmth bubbling through me. He's totally right. I at least have Jeremy, who loves and appreciates me just the way I am.
I gotta go, Jeremy says. Aubrey's calling me.
Of course she is. Okay, I say glumly, because I want to talk more with him about my feelings for Logan, or better yet, how I find out what his are about me. Not going to happen now with Aubrey calling. Talk again soon. Love you.
Love you back,
he says, and then he disconnects. I lean back against the armrest of the couch and tap my phone to my chin. I could ask Logan outright what he thinks is going on between us, but God, if he thinks it's just casual and he's sort of hoping and expecting I'll leave sometime soon, I don't think I can handle that. Maybe I'll just wait a bit. We're flying out on Sunday morning to Seattle, and we'll be spending 4 days with his parents. I'll see how things go. Then maybe we can have a meaningful talk when we return. Or I could totally chicken out and just head back to New York without ever risking my heart being on the line.
Chapter 22. Logan. This was such a bad idea, I say, and then I grunt as I drive into Valentine from behind. It wasn't my bad idea, she pants as I start moving faster. You're the one that crawled into the shower with me. That I did, but fuck. She was sexy and wet, and I wanted her, so what's a man to do? I still knew it was a bad idea, and it didn't stop me. We were already running late as it was to get to the airport, but Valentine's body was just begging for me to help wash it, you know? I had only intended to soap her up. Maybe cop a feel. Bad idea. One thing led to another, my hand between her legs, and then she went to her knees and sucked my cock for a bit. And let me just say, no one sucks cock like Valentine. Finally, I pulled her to her feet, spun her around quickly so her hands slapped against the tile wall for balance, and then I was driving into her from behind. And fuck me, It gets better every time. Her body takes me with such eager anticipation, such ease now, that I seriously think it might be addicted to my cock. I know, without a doubt, I'm addicted to her pussy. Just needed one last time. I grunt each word as I thrust into her roughly. My voice is harsh, breathless, and I'm right on the edge. Not going to be much opportunity, baby, at my parents' to fuck. Valentine doesn't say anything, but she often can't string words together when I'm working her over hard this way. But she does manage to huff out, "Why's that?" "Because you can't be quiet?" I growl as my hips move faster, racing to the finish and dragging her right along with me. She makes a scoffing sound, sort of mixed with a moan, but manages to say, "I can so keep quiet if I need to." I'm too far gone with pleasure to laugh at her, but I bring my hand between her legs and give a quick, hard rub to her clit as I hammer into her pussy. Her orgasm ignites quickly, catching her off guard, and she screams. "Yeah, you're so quiet," I laugh as I push in deep one last time and join her in release. She giggles and leans her head back against my shoulder. My arms go around her, and we just embrace for a quiet moment under the hot spray. But then I remember we're running late, and I reluctantly pull out of her, giving a sharp slap to her ass that makes her yelp. I grin at her. "Hurry up and finish your shower." "I still have to wash my hair and shave my legs," she grumbles. "Then I need to dry my hair, 20 minutes at least." "Then get to it," I order her as I step out of the shower and grab a towel. Valentine doesn't do as I ask, instead looking longingly at my dick that's still half hard. She looks at it knowing what I know. She could totally get me fully hard without little effort at all if we had time. Valentine's the only woman I've ever been with who can get me recharged so fast, which gives credence to my earlier statement. Pretty sure I'm addicted to her. To that pussy, that body, that smile, that laugh, that warmth, that charm, that kindness, that goofiness. Fuck, I'm just gone for her. I dry myself off as I walk to my bedroom, looking at the two suitcases on the bed. Mine is a duffel bag, and Valentine's is the biggest one she brought. She was going to pack another, but I put my foot down and told her she had to figure out how to pack for less than a week in one suitcase. She merely lifted her chin and said, "Got it." I cocked an eyebrow at her.
"I said I got it,"
she said firmly. So I kissed her, just a quick one before I rubbed my nose against hers. Good girl. And now that girl was coming home to meet my parents. I wasn't lying to Valentine when I told her this trip had already been planned for several months, but my inviting her was definitely more than just a whim. I wanted my family to meet her, and then I was going to pick their minds to see if they saw what I saw. Someone I could make a life with. Not sure how that would work, though, as my career is pretty locked tight in East Merritt. Valentine is definitely mobile, and doesn't have tethers from what I've learned. She's not close to her family, has no close friends other than her cousin Jeremy, and she really doesn't have a career. It's something I want to talk to Valentine about sooner rather than later, because without her having any set agenda as to what she's doing, she could just up and decide to return to New York one day without us having the chance to really talk things out about how we feel. I drop my towel to the floor and proceed to get dressed. My travel wear to Seattle isn't any different from what I'd wear here, although I can't help but grin as I see Valentine has laid out some rather stylish-looking clothes. Sassy lies beside them, watching me curiously, but she hasn't seemed to get wigged out over the suitcases on the bed. Sarah's going to come by later today and grab the dog, promising to keep her until we return. My cell phone rings, and I immediately recognize my sister Tabby's ringtone. She's the youngest of our brood, but I'm closer to her than my other siblings, although I love them all dearly. It's just I am the oldest, and Tabby is the youngest, and thus I've been her protector most of the time. There's a 7-year age difference, which puts her closer to Valentine's age, and I'm hoping they hit it off nicely. What's up? I ask her as I grab a pair of socks and sit on the edge of the bed so I can put them on. I tuck the phone between my ear and shoulder so I can multitask. Hey, Logan, she says, and I can tell by the quiet tone something's wrong. Glad I caught you before you left. What's wrong? I ask as I drop my socks and hold the phone with my hand as I stand from the bed. Listen, she begins slowly. Meredith just called me, and then she sent me some stuff about Valentine that I think you need to see. It's not good. My head spins with confusion. Wait a minute. Our cousin Meredith? In New York? She's a television news producer, and we don't see each other often, but we keep in contact regularly via Facebook and such. Yeah, she apparently reads this blog written by Valentine French, Tabby says, again with a voice that sounds tentative. I had messaged her on Facebook you were coming to visit and bringing a girl, told her she was from New York, and when I told her Valentine's name, she immediately knew who she was. So she writes a blog and Meredith reads it, I say, flummoxed. So what? Well, Meredith doesn't read it religiously, Tabby explains. Hadn't for months, actually. But once I told her Valentine had been in Alaska for a few weeks, she pulled it up and read it. And, well, I think you need to read what she wrote. Those last words and the dread-filled angst with which she said them makes my blood go cold. Email them to me. Already did, she murmurs. And, Logan, just try to read them with a grain of salt. My spidey sense is tingling so hard from the ominous way in which Tabby tries to prepare me that I just disconnect the phone without even saying goodbye. I pull up my email, vaguely noting the shower has gone quiet, and I know Valentine will be doing her makeup next, then her hair. That's her routine. I tap on Tabby's email, and it has 5 links, each one appearing to be a different blog article. I click on the first one and read. By the time I read the last one, I am beyond furious. I walk out of my bedroom into the bathroom and find Valentine stroking a brush across her cheeks. Her wet hair is slicked back, and she's got a towel wrapped around her body, tucked in tight over her breasts. She looks at me in the mirror and grins. I'm going as fast as I can, so I'll remind you again that it's your fault we're running late since you got in the shower with me. You don't have to worry about being late, I say in a low voice. You won't be going to Seattle with me. Valentine's hand stills, and she lowers the brush from her cheek. She tilts her head in confusion, still looking at me through the mirror. I don't understand. I just read your blog, I tell her softly. Well, at least the articles you wrote since you came to Alaska. Valentine spins around, her eyes filled with apology. Logan, I'm sorry. I was going to tell you, but I wasn't quite sure how. Save it, I bark at her, fury boiling hotter than ever, knowing that she knew it was wrong and still didn't tell me. I lower my voice to a dead calm. You came here with the intent to date multiple men and write about them. I got trapped in that, and not only did you write about me without my permission, but you shared intimate details about our sex life. Logan! And you know what I find most abhorrent about what you did? I ask quietly. She doesn't say anything but shakes her head slowly. That this is apparently all a game to you. That's not true. You told intimate details about our sex life, and you did it to embarrass your family. I snarl at her. That's what your article said. But did it ever cross your selfish mind once that it would embarrass me or my family? I didn't think they'd ever see it, she says lamely. Get all your stuff packed up, Valentine, I tell her as I walk out of the bathroom and head back to my room. I can hear her scurrying behind me. I want you out of my house by the end of the day. I quickly put on my socks and boots. I pick up my duffel bag and swing it over my shoulder. Valentine moves quickly and puts herself right in my path, her hands going to my chest. Logan, wait. Please, just let me explain. There's a part of me that doesn't want to hear a damn thing she has to say. But there's a part of me that might be a glutton for punishment that does. You've got 2 minutes.
I did come here with an agenda,
she says quickly, as she knows I'm not going to give her a second over that 2 minutes.
I was going to date the men and then write witty articles about them, comparing them to New York men.
Yeah, I got that much, I say dryly.
But I didn't factor in you,
she says softly.
I didn't know how great you were, and when I did find out, I was still stuck in that mindset that I had to report to my fans about what I was discovering. And I was discovering that you were a man unlike any other I've ever known. You made me feel things I never knew were even possible.
I stare at her stonily, none of her words really making a difference to me.
I struggled with what to do, she continues. Keep giving my readers what they want, or stopping. And Logan, I chose not to give them any more. There came a point where I couldn't share what we had with everyone. Not since that day you forced me to drive your truck down your driveway, and I was scared shitless, and you made me do it anyway, and then you were so proud of me at the end that I just couldn't share you with them anymore. You were real, and everything else wasn't. So I stopped writing.
I flinch, because I wasn't expecting her to say all of that. I sort of suspected that perhaps this thing between us had a more defined expiration date, and my gut is that Valentine was probably going to leave in the near future to go back to her life, and leave me here none the wiser.
Logan, she says desperately. I am so very sorry, especially that I embarrassed you. But I wouldn't take any of it back, even if I could.
I jerk and blink at her in disbelief. What? Valentine's eyes fill with tears and her voice quavers when she says,
I wouldn't take back any of that stuff I wrote about you, because that would mean that it didn't happen. It would mean that I would have never met you, and had breakfast with you, and had you take me clothes shopping, and find me in the woods. I wouldn't have any of that, and you're right. I'm selfish. I want those memories. I can see in your eyes that this is over, but I'm never giving up those memories.
If I didn't know any better, I'd think I'm having a heart attack with the sudden pain that tears right through my chest. I ignore it, though, and swallow down any compassion for her story. I get what you were doing, but you abused my trust and my feelings for you. She nods, tears now starting to fall.
I know.
Out of here by the end of the day. I remind her softly as I turn toward my door, not even taking time to get a good last look at her. I'm not even all the way through it when I hear her say in a voice so low I almost don't hear it,
I love you, Logan, but I don't deserve you.
Got that right, I think, as I walk out of my house and get into my truck.
Chapter 23, Valentine. 2 weeks later. This is just pathetic, Aubrey says as she stands in the doorway to my bedroom and stares at me with judgmental eyes and perfectly coiffed blonde hair. Even your dog is depressed. Jeremy sits in a chair by my bedroom window, one leg crossed over the other. His elbow rests on the arm of the chair, and his chin sits in the palm of his hand.
Aubrey's right. You're just pathetic.
I choose to ignore both of them, but make a mental note to change my locks when they leave. I flip carelessly through a fashion magazine, my dull eyes not really taking anything in.
At least she's dressed, Aubrey says to her husband.
And it appears she washed her hair, Jeremy adds.
The apartment is a disaster, Aubrey comments, and then walks back out of my room, but calls over her shoulder. I'm going to clean the kitchen.
I don't say anything, just flip through the magazine. I'm in my bed, but I'm sitting up in it, cross-legged with yoga pants and a long-sleeved t-shirt. My feet are bare, and I'm sure I need a pedicure, but hey, at least I'm not hiding under my covers, sleeping for 20 hours a day, which admittedly I did when I first returned from Alaska. Since then, Jeremy's been coming by almost every day, trying to poke me back into some type of normalcy. I refuse to budge, only getting out of bed to feed Sassy or myself. This lasted 3 days. And then Jeremy brought in the big guns. Aubrey. Knowing I despised her. That evil, evil man. That first day, she came into my apartment and sat in the same chair Jeremy is occupying and told me in painstaking detail about every single minute of her honeymoon with Jeremy. And I mean every detail. It was so awful, it forced me out of bed, and I hid in the bathroom until she left. But those two weren't giving up on me. Every day they came by, and I could tell Aubrey was getting a kick out of it, because sooner rather than later, she was pissing me off, and I was actually snarling and cursing at her at times. She'd just look at me smugly and say, "Wow, you actually have some color in your cheeks. Well done." Finally, I look up at Jeremy and tell him sincerely, "You two can stop coming over. I'm fine." He just arches an eyebrow at me. "Seriously," I tell him. "I've even made plans to have lunch with Janelle Barstow tomorrow, and we're going to go shopping."
"Are you lying to me?"
Jeremy asks, suspiciously. "No," I say, truthfully. "I'm sick to death of this apartment, and I'm tired of moping over Logan. I've got to move on."
"Going to reopen Valentine's couch?"
he asks, but then Aubrey calls in from the kitchen. "Val, can I throw away whatever this is in the green container in the fridge? It looks disgusting." "No," I yell back. "That's Sassy's. Raw moose meat." I can hear Aubrey say, "Ew." Whatever. The one thing I took away with me was that Sassy looked and acted the healthiest she ever had since I've had her. And it could have just been the clean, crisp air, but it could have been the unusual raw food diet I had her on. Fortunately, it was nothing to find a boutique grocer who would special order the stuff for me and deliver it.
"Valentine's couch," Jeremy asks again.
"No," I tell him, without a trace of sadness or regret. "That's gone forever." Which I know isn't exactly true. Once something is on the internet, it's forever. But before I even left Alaska, as I sat at the Ketchikan International Airport with April, who kindly saw me off, I logged into my web host and deleted my entire domain. I obliterated Valentine's couch with just a few key taps. While it was something that I enjoyed and kept me amused, it was also something that cost me very dearly, and I couldn't even bear to think of those articles I wrote about East Merritt and its people, and most especially Logan, remaining live.
"I'm sorry you're hurting,"
Jeremy says, softly.
"Want me to go out to Alaska and kick his ass for being such a prick to you?"
"No," I say, glumly. "I deserved it. I had no right to ever put those things out there."
"Oh, bullshit,"
Jeremy says as he sits forward in the chair.
"It's what you did, Val. It was your job, your shtick. You wrote an advice column that was shit for advice, but was so fucking funny everyone read it. You never did anything with malice, and as far as Logan goes, you were respectful of him. You may have given a little too much detail, and you apologized for it, but you were respectful. Period. End of story. If he doesn't get that, he's a moron."
I just blink at Jeremy after he finishes his tirade. "Respectful? I embarrassed him."
"Big fucking deal," Jeremy says with a shrug. "Now everyone knows he's got a big dick. He's probably strutting around East Merritt now."
"And probably has every female in Alaska after him," I say morosely. Now that they know he hands out orgasms the way Willy Wonka handed out candy.
"Maybe you should call him," Jeremy suggests. "He's had time to cool down. Maybe he'd like to talk to you, and he's too scared to reach out since he was such a tool when you parted ways."
I glance down at the magazine on my lap for a moment and then sigh. When I look back up at Jeremy, I ask him, "Know what the last thing I told him was before we parted ways?"
"That you loved him?"
he guesses. I said that, but that wasn't the last thing. I told him I loved him, and then I told him I didn't deserve him.
Jeremy doesn't say anything, so I push my chin out and look at him expectantly. "What's your point?"
he asks with confusion. "I don't deserve him," I articulate each word. "After what I did, I do not deserve someone like him. I'm where I'm supposed to be, and he's where he's supposed to be. Time to move on."
"Fine,"
Jeremy says as he raises his hands and stands up from the chair.
"You seem to have everything under control. Lunch plans and shopping tomorrow, and firm acceptance of lost love. I think our work here is done."
Jeremy starts to walk out of my room. "Wait a minute," I say, and he stops, looking over his shoulder at me. "Aubrey going to finish cleaning my kitchen?" Jeremy just rolls his eyes and leaves. Within moments, I hear both of them walking out of my apartment and shutting the door behind them. With a sigh, I toss the magazine onto my night table and roll off the bed. I pad into the kitchen, Sassy following along, and I prepare her dinner of raw moose meat. I feel only slightly nostalgic as I do it. While Sassy eats, I boot up my laptop, which hasn't been turned on since I left Alaska, intent on perhaps ordering takeout. I take a few moments, finally deciding on a Lebanese restaurant down the block that delivers. My gaze drops down to my email icon, and I see I have a grand total of 732 emails waiting for me. Jesus, it will take me forever to go through them. Well, food will take at least an hour to get here, so I take a deep breath, sit down on my island stool, and pull up my email. As expected, most of them are from fans of Valentine's Couch, wondering where my blog went and expressing serious concern about me. This makes me feel bad, and I should at least send out an announcement to my newsletter database that I've retired the blog. I read each email, some causing me to get a little misty-eyed, but the hateful ones I delete.